We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. That guy over there, the one, the only, the incomparable Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
Good. Very excited for the show. Very excited to have a guest, one of my favorite people on the show. A fascinating topic, obviously, sports gambling. But I went to a fantastic concert recently. We were recording this early on in the week. It was a Sunday night show. We can get to it at the end of the episode.
We can get into it at the end of the episode. Yeah. I feel a little bit emotionally wounded that you did not tell me in advance you were going to this show. We could have spent many hours, many minutes at the minimum talking about it on this program. And we did not because you did not tell me. I thought we were closer, but whatever.
I thought I did.
Whatever.
I guess I didn't.
It's fine.
So it was Green Day, Fall Out Boy, Weezer, and a band called The Interrupters, who I arrived too late to see, at Wrigley Field. It was a really, really good time, and I'm quite glad I went.
We will talk later. We can talk later.
We'll talk later.
Yes.
This show that we are doing, and we have, I suppose, more housekeeping to take care of, but you've seen the topic. It's Jeff Schwartz, who co-hosts Big Boy Bets with me, in addition to other shows that are without me for some reason, where we talk about college football wagering and issues that can come across for large humans, of which Jeff is one, like I always mention.
And we're going to talk to him about buffet strategies, just to give you a little portal into what goes on in Big Boy Bets. Buffet strategies for him, as he's defined himself on his Twitter, a fat kid living a dream. As a larger gentleman, I don't think that's going too far to say.
Do you know where that comes from, by the way?
Fat kid living a dream?
The fat kid living a dream?
I don't think I do.
I believe in 2007, Jeff and at least one or two other guys were on the Jim Rome show. And Jim, as I call him because I'm a close dear friend.
Sure.
Jim asked some question that elicited Jeff, I think it was Jeff saying it, or maybe it was another one of the offensive linemen saying, like, look, man, we're just a bunch of fat kids living the dream. And that stuck. I know they may have done a calendar or something in the following year. It was great.
Jeff Schwartz will be by momentarily here. Yeah, we're going to do a little bit of just a discussion around college football gambling. Some of the lines that are of interest as we look forward into week one, any win-loss totals that are of interest. Of course, Jeff, much like yourself, Dan, has a proclivity towards all things Pac-12. That obviously is a source of much of his knowledge. So we'll dive into that and much, much more. We'll get to the buffet strategy, I promise you.
Yes.
Here momentarily. As you said, a little bit of housekeeping on the topic of gambling. If we could take a knee for a second.
Please, let's take that knee.
Without giving too much away, because I don't believe I am able to at this point. some of these thoughts around week one lines could come into play. If you are a Patreon Verballer, verballers.com, some of this gambling wisdom could be of particular interest to you, given some of what we have coming in the next week or so.
Or lack of belief in Ty's gambling wisdom.
Or lack of belief in gambling wisdom.
Yeah.
Either or, I can't say more.
It's coming.
I will soon. But just keep it in the back of your mind. Maybe get a little notepad or something and just jot down the things that you like or don't like and just commit it to memory, because we may have something cool just around the corner.
It's the Venn diagram that it's the intersection of fun, serious college football things and one of the stupider elements of the solid verbal ever. It's at that really specific intersection.
It's right at that intersection. Yeah. It's where they overlap.
Yeah.
So stay tuned. We do have that.
Verballers.com, right? Verballers.com is where people should monitor and learn more about being both a Patreon subscriber and the very mysterious news that you alluded to.
I'm very excited about this, to say the least. One of the dumber things we've done, which makes it all the more exciting.
Correct.
The only other thing that I have to talk about is go on out wherever you get your podcasts. Obviously, download the show, tell your friends about the show. But since we are getting into the season now, and since more folks are looking for college football podcasts, please do go out there and leave us a review. If you like the show, if you got something to say, if you want to tell others how much you like the show, every little bit does help us. So go on out there, leave a 5-star review, and let some of the other folks out there who are looking for podcasts know about fine work we're doing here.
Definitely. Agree.
On that note, without further ado, he is our friend. He is our colleague. He co-hosts Big Boy Bets. Where else can we find him, Dan? Fox Sports, SiriusXM.
Jeff Schwartz is smarter than you. Yeah, he does that with our friends Gabe Goodwin and Matt Ford. They're fantastic. I love them. Fantastic.
Please welcome Jeff Schwartz back to the show, the so-called fat kid living a dream, per your Twitter. Sir, how are you?
Well, I'm not so-called. I am a fat person who is also living the dream. I'm good. I'm excited for football. You know, we have week zero action. We have like legit week zero. We have Nebraska, Illinois, right, in a weird conference game, and UCLA and Hawaii. Like, we have real football in just under 2 weeks, and I'm ready for it, but I don't think I'm really understand it's happening that soon.
What's it like for you, having played the game? Now you're on the outside to some extent looking in. Do you still, like, how do you get pumped up now versus how you got pumped up for this before?
Oh, I mean, now I feel like you get overwhelmed with information, right? I mean, you can find so many different ways to preview the season. I've actually found myself scaling back over the years. You know, when I first retired, I read all those, you know, all the guides before the season, right? Just read everything I could. And now it's like, well, let me just read one or two, because you get overwhelmed with information. I feel like, especially in the gambling space now, right? Everyone has a preview and all these trends and all this stuff. And that's why I think I do really well gambling in the Pac-12, because I focus on the conference so much. I don't have to read all the stuff about the league. I already kind of know it, but just naturally, it's just, so I try to not to get bogged down anymore of just reading all these different previews, all these different guides, because in college football and really in the NFL too, I mean, both sides, you know, things change very quickly, right? You have a guy gets hurt, boom, someone else comes in. Like, things are just kind of fluid all the time. If you get bogged down with information, I think it makes your preparation tough for the year. So I just try to let it roll, man. And when it comes to the season, I feel pretty prepared to talk about the top teams. I mean, it's different what I do than, you know, for you guys, you're previewing everyone, right? I don't have to do that. I don't have to learn about the seventh team in the MAC. So it's a little different preparation for me.
Do you have a general philosophy that you try to adhere to? I mean, it always changes. It always is situational, by the game, by the situation. But do you recognize in yourself, like, okay, this is how when I look at a line, this is how when I look at teams, this is how when I look at a situation, this is how I approach it?
Yeah, I try not to bet on my favorite teams. That's one thing. I just don't bet on Oregon. I don't bet on the Chiefs very much in the NFL. That's a good way to approach it. No, I mean, look, I think that gambling is so different than picking games straight up, right? And even as a player, the idea of matchups and whatnot, that might not determine who covers the spread, right? I mean, that's part of it. We're talking about a team losing by 15 or less points, right? We're not talking about wins and losses sometimes, or a team needing to win by a touchdown, and a little, 8 points, right? So
a touchdown, competitive a team is, yeah.
So I think college football, though, there's some pretty easy opportunities, especially when you have those look ahead games, right? When a team is on the road before they have a big home game, put the points in the dog. It's really hard in sports to bet on bad football teams, but that's really where the money's at, right? Like betting on bad teams to cover games at home is where you find yourself in the end, I think, making a lot of money, and that's really hard to put your money on bad football teams. I mean, look, I gamble on baseball. We talked about it before we started. Yeah. You have to bet bad baseball teams. That's the way you make money in baseball. Like, because, so it's just, it's hard to swallow that concept sometimes. But I think in the end, that's the way to go.
Well, you bring up the look ahead game. Yeah. And on our show, we have any number of different catchphrases that we'll tag a game with. The letdown look ahead sandwich, right? The sandwich game after the big game before another big game. A body blow theory, right? If you play a team like Navy, or back in the day, if you played Stanford, a really physical team.
Wisconsin, yeah.
Yeah, Wisconsin, perhaps the very next week your team would lag, right? Is that a real thing? Are any of these real when you're out there on the field, or is it just something that Dan and I do to amuse ourselves?
Well, I think it's real on the college side because these kids are 18 to 22 years old, right? So they're very emotional, and it's very naive to think they don't know who they're playing in 2 or 3 weeks, right? So if you are, look, I'll talk about Oregon. I'm like kind of worried the Fresno State opener is going to be a clunker for this exact reason. Like, they know they're playing Ohio State. Everyone knows they're playing Ohio State. This game has been circled for years. It's a game that I know the program and staff feel like can be their coming out game, right? Of look, we blew the Auburn game 2 years ago. Let's go to Ohio State and win. There's no debating that that's being thought about right now. Obviously, they have to play Fresno State first. And I think they're like 3 touchdown favorites, which in any other situation, I'd be like, sweet. I would take Oregon at home just because, but I'm worried. These are kids, right? They're going to think to themselves, I've been in the same spot, right? We can beat Fresno. Let's not, we can beat them. Kind of let's, and you don't really play less hard against Fresno, but your mind is kind of already in that place of like, we're playing Ohio State next week. And so I think it matters now. In the NFL, not so much, right? In the NFL, it's each week is so regimented, and you're a pro, right? So it's a job. And so you're not really looking ahead to playing the team in front of you, because if you don't play very well that week, you're going to lose. Look, if Oregon comes out and gives a C effort against Fresno State, they probably win the game. They don't cover, but they win the game. In the NFL, you can't do that, right? So the look ahead stuff, I think, is very true. Now, the body blows is interesting. I hadn't thought about that one before. I mean, I definitely think if it's non-conference game, it could matter a little bit more if you're not used to that physicality. I mean, I just think that's what sets apart kind of the SEC. And when people say, hey, we want X team to play in a bigger conference, Cincinnati or UCF. I mean, I heard that stupid argument that the American conference is more depth than the Pac-12 conference. You have to play a Power 5 team each and every week, right? Like, that's the difference. It's you stack those games up in a row, and by game 6, you're beat up, your depth is not there. That's what always impressed me about the SEC, and really what Bama's always done is that each week, right, it's a physical grind each week in that conference, and yet each week they keep being able to do it. I never thought about that. Like, is there numbers after you play Wisconsin or Navy where teams struggle?
Not necessarily. That's why we call it the body blow theory, that we as old people are saying to ourselves, well, they're probably really sore from having to play Stanford or Wisconsin.
I think there's some personal pride in that too, right? If you get beat up against Wisconsin the next week, you want to show you're not that soft, right? Or you're not that team. So there could be the adverse. I think for Navy, it's really hard because that's such a different offense, right?
Right.
So you're like, if you're on defense, you spend that entire week preparing for something you see once every 4 years if you play them, randomly.
And we used to call it, to some extent, we still do, the Bruce Feldman body blow theory, because he had a stat about teams that would play Navy. And after
the
they
week
played,
after, yeah.
Yeah, the week after they played Navy, and I don't recall. I have to go back and look. I don't know if it was a straight up loss or maybe just against the spread. But the larger point was just that you play Navy, you get kind of beat up. The following week, maybe you're not your optimal self.
That makes sense, I think, because that game is so unique. Like, if you're a defense, you might not see that many cut blocks all season if you're a defensive lineman. And, like, that takes its toll that week of practice, right? Of kind of getting your body back. I could see that being the case on defense. Offensively, I don't know. Navy doesn't do anything defensively that's so unique. I think for, again, vision to piece that out as far as if it's just the defense that kind of feels that body blows. The offense shouldn't feel a certain way. Navy's not overly physical in defense. They don't have anything that they do that's so unique.
You could argue, but they don't have a defense at all, at least the last 2 years.
Last year was very tough. But yes, look, they're always going to be undersized, and I think it's why I like watching them play. Right? They fight for everything. They're scrappy and they're fun to watch.
Something that I've started to pay attention to that I haven't dug into the numbers for gambling purposes and what it looks like against the spread. But instead of looking at how a team might play after an especially power-oriented team or an unusual, you know, the flex bone or the option offense that, you know, Georgia Tech used to run or Navy, Army, stuff like that, I'm starting to wonder if the preparation, you can speak more to this from a football perspective too, that preparing to play a 3-3-5 team or on defense, an offensive line or an offense in general, or even preparing to play, you know, the sort of defense that Iowa State pioneered a few years ago that teams have been using against the spread, which is almost like a 3-2-6 system, that there are so many assignments that are practiced for offensive linemen and offenses in general against a 4-3 or against a 3-4. And then, I was reading about this with Mississippi State's defense, that an offensive coordinator said, like, it's not something we practice against. Yeah. And that is something to me that is fascinating, that in the way that you're learning to play against an option team, you're learning to switch assignments on the fly during practice before a game against that team.
I'll just speak from the offensive line perspective. You know, the 3-3-5 it gives you really tough double teams, right? Because you're not really used to playing guys that are head up on your body at the snap. And that's really what it is, right? And they move every snap. So they don't just stay there either. So, you know, in a 4-2-5, yeah, you might have some line movement, but that line movement is stuff you practice all the time. In a 3-3-5, it's hard to get the scout team to give you that look that week of practice too, right? I mean, it's hard to, and then you get into a game, it's like, oh crap, they're moving everywhere. What do we do? But the thing is, if you know how to block it up, then you can hit those big gains, right? I mean, you know, those defenses aren't infallible, but they're really hard to play each and every week. And then, you know, so if you have a veteran offensive line that knows how to pass protect, knows how to double team, you're able to kind of, you know, handle that better. But you have to have the personnel. I think that's really tough about 3-3-5 is when you're behind in a game, trying to stop the run game is kind of hard. Like when it kind of gets rolling, you just don't have the bodies, right? You don't have the big bodies in there to stop that. But it makes sense, teams doing that. Teams are passing more often now. Defenses seem to be playing the pass to the run. It used to be play the run to the pass, right? And now they're
getting
playing the
more
pass
speed
into
on
the
field.
Run.
Yep.
So I liked where they're going. But we've also seen, Dan, now too, a bunch of defenses are moving in the other direction. They had that 3-3-5, that 3-4 scheme-ish, and they're going back to 4-2-5 because it's a lot happening in that defense. It's hard with, you know, the lack of practice time with so many rotating players, I think, to run that style of defense.
Yeah, so I'm going to pay attention to it just in terms of what the lines look like for teams, favorites playing against more unorthodox or more unusual defenses. Let's take a look. I saw a stat that Brett McMurphy, who is now a believer of the Action Network.
Yes.
Is that the new thing?
Yeah.
We like Brett. Brett's a good dude. He pointed out that in the last 20 years or so, the teams that won the national championship, all but two started in the top seven of the preseason AP poll. That would be Auburn in 2010. Not familiar with that squad. Not familiar.
They didn't actually win that season because it was, you know, the problem is that, you know, when you make a referee mistake, like they did to end the game, the game is under inevitable
it's
protest.
Under protest,
like,
I still haven't heard a ruling. Auburn, of course, started 22 that year, and then Florida State started number 11. That would be the Jameis Winston redshirt freshman year, 2013. So, if you look at the current top seven, which is, I'm sure you have it in front of you.
Yeah, Ty, I've got it. It's Alabama, Oklahoma, Clemson, Ohio State, Georgia. No surprise in the top five. Texas A&M is six and Iowa State is seven. Just to round out the top 10, then we've got Cincinnati at eight, Notre Dame at nine, North Carolina at 10. Cincinnati at eight is really interesting to me. Now, I'm not going to mount any kind of case here for Cincinnati as a playoff contender, as a national championship contender, but It's really high for Cincinnati, and they have a good schedule that I think could get people thinking about, all right, what could these guys do against a better team? So that being what it is, out of that top seven, no surprises in the top five. A&M at six is kind of high for me, given that they've got a freshman quarterback or a new quarterback. And then there's the Iowa State question, which we spent a great deal of time talking about Iowa State. How legit are they or aren't they? They certainly bring everybody back, which is, you know, you have to feel good about the returning production. But there's your top seven.
Yeah. Here's the thing about college football.
And there people, are teams outside of the top seven.
People, there are. People just don't really like having the conversation that there is this upper tier of teams and then there's a tier two. And tier two is really good football. You just mentioned a lot of those teams probably, right? A&M, North Carolina, Iowa State, Cincinnati, a Pac-12 school possibly in there as well. There's that tier two, good football teams, but they're not winning the championship. Iowa State's not winning the championship. Cincinnati's not winning the championship. I think maybe you can make a case for North Carolina if Sam Howell's as good as people want him to be, right? If he's the best quarterback in the country this year, maybe, right? They don't have Clemson until the ACC championship game. They beat Clemson in a good game and then they end up going to the playoff. Okay, I could maybe make that case. I could make the case possibly for USC being in the playoff with their schedule, but that just feels very gross because they're not good enough to win a championship. But look, there's the upper echelon of teams, and most likely we're going to end up having Alabama or Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma. Like, that's just the way it's going to be. And until we get a new playoff format, then we'll have 12 teams. But guess what? Out of those 12 teams, guess who's can win? About four of the same teams, right? Until we see otherwise. Like, it's people hate talking about that, but it is true. And I think that Oregon's building a program to where we can compete at that level. I think not this year. I think next year's with our new quarterback situation is kind of the year where, okay, we have all these blue chip guys. Now can we go do it in a playoff? And by the way, the playoff also, a 12-team playoff, actually makes it more difficult for anyone outside of that tier one to win a championship. I know people think it makes it easier because they get in. No. In the old system, you had to win two games to win a title, right? Just two games. In the new system, anyone outside that top four has to win four games. Are you telling me that Cincinnati, Iowa State, these other teams, you're not winning four straight games against those teams? You're just not doing it. So people hate.
So who from the second tier, though, numbers wise, just from a value perspective? I understand where you're saying from living in reality.
I mean, Florida's at plus 4,000. I mean, Mullins is a 4, good 5, coach. You have to look at the easiest path into a playoff, right? And North Carolina, I think, if you're looking at past the playoff, right? I mean, they don't play Clemson in the regular season, so they can get them in the title game. It's in Charlotte, right? So they're gonna have a ton of fans at the game. They Sam Howell plays out of his mind, and they're in the playoff. And then anything can happen, obviously. Again, I think so that, and there's different sports books will have to make the playoff wagers, which I can't, it's hard to find in a lot of these places. Like Iowa State's plus 2,500. Are they going to really run the table in the Big 12? They've never won 10 games in their program history.
Regular season games.
No, I don't think they've ever won 10 games ever.
They've won nine games three times.
Yeah.
Like 18 or 1906, the year 2000, and last year. They're the only three times that's ever happened.
I mean, I guess you can make a case for USC at plus 5,000 because their schedule. Again, I think they lose to whoever they play in the Pac-12 championship game because Washington or Oregon is just going to physically pound on them. And then Oregon, look, I mean, Dan and I talk about this every day, right? Mm-hmm. About Anthony Brown every day. And we're trying to convince ourselves Anthony Brown will be better than what he is.
The hottest text chain in America.
And if Anthony Brown, if Anthony Brown completes 67% of passes this year, which will be a lot for his career, which is not actually high compared to where the top quarterbacks in college football are at now. Mm-hmm. We have a chance. I mean, it comes down to that. If they, again, Oregon could beat Ohio State if Anthony Brown plays better than what he is. It's that simple. If they beat Ohio State, they're probably in the playoff team. Now, can they win the championship? Probably not.
So here's my question about Oregon. We're framing this in terms of the playoff, which I know you hate, Dan. You secretly hate that.
But I'm okay with people making money however they can.
Well, and that's where I'm going to go with it.
Like plus, I'm seeing 5,000 right now.
To win the championship,
To win the championship, plus 8,000. Here's the deal. Oregon's over-under is 9. And per, I think, the latest line that I see here, it looks like most people are hitting the over pretty hard.
Right.
So that contention that maybe you guys have about Anthony Brown it seems like the betting public is willing to cast that aside and willing to go over on the nine. How do each of you feel around that over under?
I mean, the best thing to do is often bet against the public. So like, the wager would play. I think nine is the absolute bottom this season. Like, that's a pretty good number. I mean, that's a number saying that the odds makers don't trust Anthony Brown. So Anthony Brown is just himself. They'll win nine games, right? They'll lose to Ohio State. They'll split Washington, Utah on the road, and maybe they drop one other one, right? And they're 9-3. That's how it goes. If Anthony Brown is better than expected, they can still lose to Ohio State, but then they're going to probably beat Washington. And I don't think it's going to be very good this year. Sorry, Husky fans. Yet, prove me otherwise. And then Utah, I think, will be really good. And winning those games at Utah will be tough. And then, you know, of course, there's other, you know, landfalls here and there.
At UCLA,
I think nine is the perfect number for them this year. I would wager the over, but I didn't put money on them this year. So I probably will bet them plus 10 in Ohio State just out of principle because I want to. But that's about it for them right now.
You just said don't bet your favorite team.
Yeah, I know, but I actually think 10, I actually think if it gets to 10.5, especially, it's a good 10.5 is a good number for that game.
The bye week is October 9th. If Anthony Brown does not work out, or if Anthony Brown gets hurt, there is a quarterback of the future on the roster that you could get in early on. If you are a believer in Ty Thompson, who is the incoming blue chip quarterback who's been there already, he's a freshman. And so the bye week is after Stanford and before Cal. It'll be a tough defense in Cal there. But you do have that opportunity. If you, I am not a believer in, you know, an 11-win Oregon team this year, but I see the point. I see the reality and the rationale.
Yeah, again, I think people don't pay attention to the Pac-12, and this is why the last 2 years have been over 55% the Pac-12 conference, which we don't always give out Pac-12 wagers on our show because we have a national audience. But I just don't think people pay attention to what's happening out west. I think, Ty, you're about to ask some win totals I like. Stanford at 3.5 is silly to me. I don't really – I mean, even if they're not good, they're going to win four games with David Shaw and like that – And they do have some talent on their team. Now, they have a tough schedule because they're the only team that has all Power 5 conference opponents. But they're going to beat Vanderbilt, right? Do we agree on that? Like, they're going to beat Kansas State. They're Washington State.
Are they? Kansas State has a legit quarterback.
They're favored by 1.5, and that's the weird body clock game on the road.
Yeah, that's a 9 a.m. body start.
That's a bad excuse. Oregon's not using that excuse when they play Ohio State.
I will.
You know what? I'm gonna tell myself, like, I've been kind of vocal about this. Like, I'm kind of not in this for like moral victories against Ohio State business.
Right.
Like, I'm just not in it for that. Either win the game or we don't.
Yeah.
Okay. So they have Kansas State at USC at Vanderbilt. So look, they should beat Vanderbilt. UCLA is going to be a toss up. Oregon is at home, but that's basically an Oregon home game. At Arizona State, I'm not as high as Arizona State as others are. You know, the Washington State, Washington, Utah, Oregon State. I mean, 3.5 just seems awful.
That's a very low number.
Well, when we did our preview show and we talked through the over-under, we both got to 3.5 for Stanford. And we were like, I get where Vegas is coming from, but that's kind of low.
Yeah, that has not made much sense to me for Stanford. As far as other win totals, I haven't done that much on the college side as far as win totals. I think they're hard to, again, unless you focus on one specific conference, they're kind of hard to do in general. Like, if you just look at the landscape and you're just like, oh, I take Alabama over. I mean, sure, that works. But like, I think it's hard to do unless you focus on one conference and you study that conference inside and out to know whether or not that those teams can hit those numbers.
Yeah, and plus you lock your money up right now and you're stuck waiting all season long to see if you cash the bet.
Mm-hmm.
I used to feel that way about futures, but I kind of don't anymore because you can make money if you think, I mean, obviously everyone thinks they're right, but if you do it to what you think is right, you manage your bankroll, there can be a payoff at the end if you choose wisely. Plus, there's also ways to get, you know, to get money in now based on off, you know, there's early lines out now. There's week one, week two lines out. And if you like some numbers, it's not really a futures bet, but you know, the numbers move. There's ways to get some good numbers now.
I see, like, what I will look at with futures, and again, I don't have data behind this, but Let me find teams that have a combination of an experienced, at least decent quarterback and a promising defense. If I can get that duo, that's what I go for. And I was going to bring up Miami when we were talking about playoff odds. Like, okay, if De'Arik King is healthy and is once again a playmaker and once again has emerging skill talent and is protected, I like the defense enough. I like their schedule enough that, like, look, if they lose comfortably to Alabama in week one, so be it. That's the best loss anybody's going to have because yeah. You can say it was Alabama and it was early, so they've improved. So that's an element to me. So a team like Pitt, for example, Pitt has an over-under. I know you haven't looked at Pitt, but like it's at 7 right now. And they have a very experienced quarterback. They have one of the better receivers in the country to me in Jordan Addison. And they have a defense that should once again be pretty strong up front. That to me is what I look for in terms of dependability of going over a win total, depending on the number.
I mean, I think anytime you can, those two things you mentioned typically carry over without a year, right? If you have a good defense, you typically stay good, right? I mean, we've seen obviously right. Situations where we think someone will be good on defense and they're not. But typically if you're good, you start the year good, you don't get
worse on defense. And the track record is there with Pitt, yeah.
And then quarterback, you're right. I mean, dynamic quarterbacks is everything now. If you can make plays outside the pocket with your legs, then you transform your offense, right? Plays that, you know, 3rd and 12, oh my God, now it's a 15-yard run, it's a first down. That makes things different. Now, it's hard to handicap those, or you can't rely on those, I think.
Right.
But it is a big part of your evaluation for season win totals.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Yeah. Ty, do you have any win totals that you are looking at particularly wide-eyed?
I think the one that jumped out at me that we talked about was Arizona State. Okay. I am one of the folks that's high on Arizona State this year. So
Jeff, why? Not as much.
Jeff, not as much.
Why? Like, I just, this is everyone. I seem not to get it. What am I missing here? Because I think they've proven nothing since Herm's been there about what they thought they were going to be. Like, what is it about them?
Well, I mean, I really like Jaden Daniels, first and foremost.
Agreed.
Last year was up and down, right? It wasn't anyone's best year, especially in the Pac-12 because he only played 4 games. But
yeah.
I really like Jaden Daniels. I take last year with a grain of salt. I like their running back a great deal. He averaged over 10 yards a carry. They bring a lot back across the field. And so I like their experience. It feels to me like the Pac-12 South is wide open. And it doesn't strike me as the kind of schedule that's got a whole lot of killers on it. I mean, they've got a road game at BYU, which, okay.
It's winnable.
Winnable.
Totally winnable.
They're at UCLA. They're at Utah. They're at Washington. I mean, those aren't easy places to go, mind you. But it doesn't seem to me like it's anything too far beyond. It's like the 60th toughest schedule in the country. So it lines up pretty well. They bring 20 guys back. I don't know.
And they miss Oregon.
And they miss Oregon.
I mean, it's at Utah, at Washington are the two obvious losses. And then outside of that, like, okay, if you love UCLA, I get it. And that was a close game that ASU, I think, fumbled away in the red zone. But, and then it's also 2020. The case for ASU is that there's not a lot of obvious losses. The case against ASU is, what have they consistently done under Herm Edwards to make you feel like this is a year where they make that leap?
It's fair. They're deeper now. I think they're sure. I think they're a lot deeper than at any point in, you know, Herm's tenure there. I have questions about, like, for as much as I like Jaden Daniels, I have questions about who's he throwing to. Like, they have some big tight ends, and that's cool.
And they just had a big injury, right, up front on their defensive line.
Defensive line, yeah, their best defensive lineman's out. But but Jaden's always had pro guys to throw to. He doesn't have that this year.
He doesn't have that, and that's a real question. Who is his number one target out? Why? But outside that, I feel pretty good.
I think 33% of his completions last year were in play action pass. That's a high number. That's high to run an offense like that all season long. And his kind of short to intermediate passes just aren't as good right now. And it's hard for me to believe that a team like that's going to just all of a sudden, you know, jump out into some team that I try. I don't really like the way Herm Edwards kind of plays college football games. Like, he plays them like pro games, right? He wants them to be one possession games at the end of the season, you got to keep the foot on the pedal the entire game. And I know he said he wants to do that more in offense. That's why he hired Zach Hill. It's why they made some changes on defense as well. I just kind of have to see it. I'm always a fan who is going to say, hey, I'm going to see it before I basically buy it, right? And I in this way, in NFL and college, I just have a hard time buying teams and players. And I love Jaden Daniels. I think if you look at the Pac-12, you know, he's the better pro than Keaton Slovis, in my opinion. But I got to see them finish games better and kind of play for blowouts, play a step on people's throats. And they're down three coaches now, too. I mean, like, they're what's going to happen with their coaching staff?
I have some week one lines, by the way. We talk about ASU sort of easier start.
Yeah.
Do any of these jump out to you naked, like that you just haven't necessarily given a lot of deep thought to, because we're still a couple weeks out? But we have Penn State and Wisconsin playing, and that's Wisconsin favored by 4.5. Stanford is 1.5. We talked about that briefly against K-State. Alabama is about 18.5 right now against Miami, neutral field.
Wow, new quarterback.
Georgia, Clemson,
yeah, that's a lot,
neutral
yeah.
field in your backyard. Clemson favored by 3.5. LSU favored by 3.5 in LA, in Pasadena, against UCLA, and Notre Dame, 7.5-point favorite against Florida State on the road.
So I bet UCLA already at +4. I mean, that line's going to move to at least a field goal before kickoff. Yeah. They play week one. They're going to beat Hawaii. They're going to be on national TV. They're going to look good doing so. You know, we talk a lot about experience coming back this year. And I think that's too much is made this year of experience, because everyone has guys returning, but they're at all different levels of returning, right? I mean, some guys out West only played 6 games last year. To me, that's not enough to be a returning starter. UCLA has veteran returnings. They have guys that have played a lot of football, right? 2 years ago, they were the youngest team in the country. Now they're one of the oldest teams in the country. And if DTR can just not turn the ball over for once. I mean, they have a chance. And I think LSU, look at the quarterback situation with their you know, their competition being basically derailed because of a broken arm. Mm-hmm. They're going to UCLA. I think this is a good chance for UCLA to kind of start the Pac-12 season off right. I have them there. I think Georgia's the play at +3.5, right? You get that hook over the field goal. They have a returning starting quarterback. It's super important. And everyone I've talked to who studies quarterbacks think JT Daniels is going to have an incredible year, like potentially a Joe Burrow-esque year where out of nowhere, it's like, boom, he's the first pick overall. And people that I trust who cover quarterbacks have said this. And I get a little over a field goal with a really good defense with, again, Ungalele is making his second start. Third start?
Uyunglele, yeah. Third start. It was BC, Notre Dame, and now.
So, I mean, I think Georgia's a good play there.
Yeah, Georgia should have, I mean, per tie, Georgia has the best returning SEC defensive line, if not the best defensive line in the country. And again, if you combine that with quarterback play, high level quarterback play, and we saw Brent Venables struggle a little bit. You know, Ian Book made plays at the end of the loss, and then obviously Justin Fields really took the top off of the Clemson defense. And if JT Daniels is on that level, this is, you know, it's a really tough task for the Clemson defense, as talented as they are on all three levels, to go against JT Daniels, especially, you know, depending on receiver health, where they're at that week one.
I think there's also, looking out west too, I mean, San Jose State at plus 16 at USC is kind of interesting. I don't know what San Jose's defense is going to be. This is where I need to do a little more research, but
right.
The USC thing to me, I don't buy USC. I just don't. But they'll win this game. But 16 points at home, San Jose State's good. I mean, good for what they are.
Yeah.
I don't know, Dan. That feels like a lot of points.
Jeff, who are you into in the Pac-12? Because so far you're not into Washington,
not into Oregon, not into USC,
not into Washington. Oregon, yeah. Arizona mean, like, State. For, you like UCLA,
what,
right?
For like, what's the concept for making the playoff or just in general?
No, just in general. Who do you just like?
You feel like is moving upward.
Yeah.
Well, Oregon's moving upward. It's just the quarterback situation, which for so long, again, we haven't had to worry about for so many years. We've been good at quarterback. I like Utah a lot this year. You know, we'll find out who's starting at quarterback. I think it'd be Brewer, but I think they'd hope it's Cam Rising, right? Because Cam has more years left. Brewer's just a stopgap. Guys, they're really physical on the offensive defensive lines. The issue is skill position players. They don't have kind of that go-to guy. I know, obviously, Keithy is one of those guys at tight end, but you kind of need a wide receiver. So we'll find out.
And they're healthier at receiver than where they were last year. Yeah,
but they still kind of don't have that guy emerging really as that number one wide receiver threat. But every game they'll be in because of their physicality. And if they get quarterback play, basically what Tyler Huntley did for them, they're going to be really good. Yeah, I mean, look, Washington, the offense to me doesn't do it for me. I mean, you can't be like 110th in explosive plays and win big college football games. You'll be in every game, but you're not going to be good teams if you can't chuck the ball down. And all the wide receivers left. I think that's a kind of a sign that maybe we're not throwing the ball very much. I mean, their head coach wore a hat that said, run the damn ball. Like, come on, man. I mean, even Mark Cristobal's not wearing that hat. And he likes to run the football. Again,
I like to say during our previews that at a certain point, you have to win 35. You have to score 35 points.
Yeah.
At a certain point, somebody's going to make you score 35. And you have to be able to flip that switch. And Utah is not alone in that. You know, they are, as you mentioned, led by the line of scrimmage play. And, you know, they serve the defense and ball control on offense. And they were actually pretty dynamic a couple of years ago. But they still didn't have that game breaker for what was Tyler Huntley started a couple years ago, and it showed in the Pac-12 championship game. So I get what you're saying. Ty, do you have any more gambling questions about college football?
Well, no, Jeff? I mean, I was just going to add one other anecdote about the week one slate. We pulled six of the games here that
Please.
We thought were interesting. That Notre Dame, do you remember back when we started talking about early lines? And I think when we read out the Notre Dame Florida State line, many
you
moons
loved.
Ago, it was,
you were eating.
Yeah, it was Notre Dame -9.5.
Yep.
And I remember saying to you, look, Notre Dame could well beat Florida State. That line is coming down. If you, like me and like half the world now, have just some mild concerns about what Notre Dame will look like with Jack Cohn as their starting quarterback.
Yeah, I saw that. That's not good.
Taking Florida State at home, big game week one, new quarterback who could set the world on fire, who knows? They were getting 9.5 a couple months ago. I think that was a good play. I still kind of like it at +7.5 because I am not buying what I've been reading about folks who are high on Jack Cohn. Just not. I'm not buying him as a vertical threat, as somebody who can play off the play action pass. No.
Yeah. Jack Cohn is not going to be very dynamic, right? So when you're in a situation like that, this is the same thing I worry about the Oregon thing, right? Is when your quarterback's not dynamic, everything has to go right on the road for you, right? Like everything, you have to, your offense has to play well, defense has to play well, you have to find an explosive play somehow. And the margin for error is much smaller when you don't have that. Now, the talent level, Notre Dame though, is just so far ahead of Florida State right now, right? I mean, that's the issue is that like
totally.
When the, and that's, so you can overcome that quarterback by just having better players all over the field. I like Mike Norvell. I liked him at Memphis. It's a 7. I mean, you still get that Hoko, the touchdown. I don't have a great feeling this one.
No, I mean, it feels like it's about the right number, to be honest with you. It feels
it's the right week. It's the right week for Florida State to get Notre Dame, right? Because depth doesn't come into it because it's week one. You have the emotion of it being a home opener and against a huge team, and that, you know, players are going to be playing maybe outside of themselves. Like, that's situationally, it is a really nice time to take a home dog. The problem is Florida State's defense was so atrocious last year.
I worry about looking at the numbers right now. There's a lot of money on Florida State. That kind of scares me off. Yeah. Like if everyone's betting Florida State, it's not like sharp movement that's moving this number. It's just the public is so on Florida State.
That's why that number came down. Yeah.
And that's why if it came down because of sharp movement, I'd be like, okay, let's go that direction. That's one thing to look at. If you have access to numbers and when you're gambling this year, if we're looking for sharp movement, it's a good way to go. Again, it's going to be home underdogs who, you know, and you're fading the public essentially on those. Again, it's hard to bite the bullet sometimes and do that. But Florida State feels like a public dog. That to me just kind of scares me away.
So, Jeff, explain that for people who are listening and don't know what the sharp movement is or how to find that.
So,
explain what that means.
It is hard to find unless you have access to like data, you know, to numbers and whatnot. You can look this up. But basically, you want to look, and this is how I gamble on baseball. It's how I do basketball a lot of times. You're not really gambling on the matchup. You're gambling on what the sharps are telling you, right? There's people that are better at this than we are, right? That their livelihood is based off of their sports wagering. And so when they go into a sports book and they put money down, that line moves because they say, you know, the sports book's like, look, if this person who we know wins a lot likes a game, we're taking big money from him, we have to move the line in that direction to hopefully get money from the other side, right? Because you want to, you know, a sports book really wants to almost have even money, right? They don't want to have so much in one direction. And so you can tell, and again, typically the good bettors, the ones who make money, go against the public, right? Because the public is me, as us, right? We're Joe Schmo. We just throw money down on the big favorite at home or whoever else. And so if you look and you have access to, I don't even know where you would be able to get it. Action Network has it, by the way. If you're, I don't want to pump them up, but if you use the Action Network app, they have the betting percentages, right? So if you see a game where one team has 70% of tickets, right? So 70% of people are wagering on that team and like 85% of the money, okay? Or really, you know, 70% of the money, right? So all the money and all the tickets are on that team. And the other team has 30% of tickets and 30% of money. And the line moves in that team's direction, right? So it opens up at -7 for the public favorite. And it goes now to -6, -5.5, -5. They're telling you the sharp money is hammering the other side, right? The non-public side, the side with a little bit of money on it, and they're moving in that direction. Those end up winning. Again, a lot of times it's home dogs. It's like Rutgers, right? It's bad home dogs that you don't want to wager on, but they end up, in the end, you have to hold your nose and bet them, they end up covering for you.
So there you go. Florida State, home dog of the week. Could happen.
There you go.
Well, no, the opposite's happening. Where it's public money is driving
the public
it.
Money's going to Florida State.
Public money's going to Florida State. So those are the ones, if you really... You want it, like I've learned over the years now to just stay away from those games, unless I have a really strong feel for Florida State. If I knew something about them that no one else knew, or, you know, or just like had a great tidbit about them, or there's something specific I liked about what they're doing, that, you know, you feel that sort of way. I'm trying to find an example for you guys of some of this reverse line movement. That I could find in week one. I'm kind of curious on where that would be. It's hard to find. I think it's so early in the season.
Yeah, and we still have time. Something that you mentioned heading into the beginning of this show was the preparation for the season and the excitement for the season, and that it's a slog, it's a long season. And I started thinking about, obviously, this is what I do. This is what we do on Big Boy Bets. Subscribe now, Big Boy Bets. We do it once a week and talk college football gambling, Jeff and myself, is the fact that there is an element to pacing yourself like you might at a buffet. And on Big Boy Bets, we talk about both college football gambling issues and sometimes issues facing large humans, of which Jeff is one. And do you have, I'm just curious, do you have buffet strategy? Do you have, I don't know if it's a breakfast buffet. I don't know if it's a Vegas buffet, if we want to tie it more closely to gambling, but in terms of quality or not so quality foods, your stayaways, right? This is both.
Yeah.
This is terminology. Because I like a good buffet.
Of course.
But I think you have to have a philosophy and a strategy and a way of doing things as you approach, and not just to go in and just grab everything that you think is going to be good.
Yeah. So I think the strategy is limit your carbs, right? is kind of stay away from like heavy potatoes. Like, why do you need to get any sort of potato at a buffet unless it's a French fry of some sort, right? Like something that like baked potato, scallop potatoes, mashed potatoes. They're just a waste of your stomach. You don't get bread at a buffet. Like, don't get heavy pasta at a buffet, in my opinion. Like, just don't do that. You want to get stuff, in my opinion, and this is the way I eat out now. I typically don't get stuff at a restaurant. I can make it home. Like, a steakhouse, I'm not getting a steak. I can make a steak at home. I don't make a rack of lamb very often at home. I just don't. I don't make a pork chop very often at home. Yeah, I don't make a lot of things like that at home anymore. So if I'm at a buffet, I'm looking at like the seafood that I don't make at home, looking for any sort of, you know, maybe there's a prime rib, which I've done at home many times, but it's a delicacy, right? I'm not eating it very often. Yeah. So I'm looking for things that I'm typically not going to find or make very easily at home.
You're also getting a custom situation with there's a carving station, if you want an end cut, correct. If you want a center cut.
An end cut. Whew. They're a little overcooked, of course, right? Because it's an end piece, but the crust and it makes up for it. The little au jus sauce, it does a great, it makes up for it very well.
And a good end cut isn't overcooked. It's just more cooked than the center. But yeah,
it's medium. Yeah, it's not going to be, it's not medium well. It's just medium. Right. So that's my buffet strategy. I haven't been to a buffet in a long time, man. I can't.
Do you save room for dessert or do you think it's a waste because it's not going to be great a dessert?
I'm not a dessert person, so I'm not saving room for dessert.
Ty, do you have buffet strategy?
Not really.
Do you like buffets?
No, not really. I think you pay for novelty with a buffet.
Right. Options.
You pay for options, you pay for novelty. But for me, it's not really worth it. Not because I can't put down some food. I can put down some food.
Sure.
But I just don't feel like I get the value out of it. Like, I'm not going to try all the options. There's only like five things up there that I really want to eat.
This is why you go for the exotic type foods there, because you get your money's worth if you get the foods you're not going to have at home. Now, of course, look, the three of us together, I used to eat this way. I don't anymore. Yeah, we're not getting our $75 worth at the Palazzo buffet. I'm going back to Vegas this weekend. I'm not going to the buffet. But I'm not going to get my money's worth there.
Right.
I guess. I just try to get my money's worth if we ever go there some other way. My wife does not like buffets, so that's not like that's not really an issue.
But this could be anything. This could be just like you're at a hotel and it's just a breakfast buffet. That's what they have available at the hotel.
So breakfast buffet again, like I'm going right to Bagel and Lox if they have a Lox.
Sure.
That's 100% favorite breakfast food by far. I mean, a good, like we've actually a place down the street here in Charlotte, the only bagel place in Charlotte that's worth any salt. Like a good bagel, man. Look, you know, the little crunch on the outside, the
so
real
breakfast,
fluffy
you
inside.
Go carbs. Breakfast, you go for the carbs.
But just a bagel. Like I'm not getting
just
pancakes.
Just the bagel.
Waffle. Yeah. Breakfast. And then I like, you know, some buffets have different type of sausages, right? Bacon and pork sausage, I can make it at home, right? But I'm not going to have a chicken apple sauce. I'm not going to have a kielbasa. I'm not going to have any other sort of sausage I typically have at home. So I'm going in the other realm, right? The things I can't get at home.
You're not filleting salmon all that often at all for breakfast.
I'm not making my own, even though it would be fun to try to make my own smoked salmon.
Here's some lox.
Oh, God, it's actually, you would cure the salmon, right? That turns into lox.
That's what I mean. Cure the salmon.
Yeah. And it's like the toast. It's actually bread, but then when you toast it, it can be called toast. right? Like, you don't.
No, these are all facts. Yeah, these all like, check out. We have a fact checker right outside of the camera. And she said, that's true.
Yeah, you only eat, toast is actually bread toasted. It's not just a thing, it's not its own thing.
Okay, so I'll tell you mine real quick because obviously I have one. Ty doesn't have a specific strategy. I avoid foods that I feel like could dry out pretty easily under a heating lamp. So chicken, especially if you're talking any sort of kebab or chicken breast. I love chicken kebabs, but you need it right off of the grill because it'll dry out.
Correct. Good point.
Even a lot of those breads, like if it's like a pizza flatbread, it's drying out. It's too easy for those things to dry out. So I'm going to lean towards things, stews, things that are in gravies. At least like they're going to stay relatively moist. They're going to stay warm and flavorful because they're in some sort of flavoring juice. I'll go in that direction. Even like crab legs, like Jeff mentioned, those are steamed. Those aren't going to dry out as easily as perhaps something that's baked and sitting under a lamp.
They're just hard to deal with.
It's too much. It's not worth it.
I probably won't do crab legs just because of I don't want activity with my meal. I just want to sit down and eat. But in those directions, like if there's some sort of dish, like I'll hit a soup because it's not drying out. I don't typically tend to go desserts, but I can be seduced by a good looking chocolate chip cookie. Breakfast wise, I will immediately, and I learned this from my father-in-law, I will, if I want like an English muffin, if I want a piece of toast with some eggs or something like that, I hit that first. I throw that in the toaster before I start collecting my other, because then I can swoop around back after I'm done collecting. Eggs, I look very closely at. I love scrambled eggs, but those dry out easily. So I'm almost keeping an eye on the egg pan to see when it's being replaced. And that's when I make my move. Almost like an hors d'oeuvre at a wedding. I'd like to know how long the scramble.
You got to wait by the door, right?
You absolutely have to wait by the door.
But yeah. Dan, a lot of those buffets have an omelet station. That's where you get your eggs.
So that's great. Yeah. That if it's an omelet station, I'm totally in. I typically prefer a scramble to an omelet, so I'll ask for that. But yeah, if you can get that custom omelet, I'm definitely going in that direction. We've had a lot of omelet conversation on this show. Ty considers himself to be super duper advanced in the omelet realm.
What's an advanced omelet take?
An advanced omelet take? I don't know if I have an advanced omelet take.
What do you look for in an omelet guy or gal? Like that differentiates a good one from a bad one.
Well, I'm looking specifically at the outside of the omelet.
Mm-hmm, of course.
I like to see it a nice rich color of yellow. Mm-hmm. And that tells me that they cooked it low and slow. They were very deliberate about the way that they went about it. If it's got brown or any kind of crust on the outside, that means they cooked it a little too hot too fast. So they were in a hurry. They weren't putting the level of artistry into it that I think you require. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is that the ingredients inside are cooked properly. Because a lot of times you might go somewhere and get an omelet where, and it could be things like mushrooms, could be things like broccoli, really whatever you're into. If they're too, unless you like it raw in there, depending on what your...
So do you like a pre-cooked veggie in your omelet?
They should cook the veggies beforehand.
Get and the water.
They should. Yeah. They should. But sometimes you get them, they're a little al dente. And that's not the mark of a good omelet.
I don't put vegetables in my omelets. That's not my concern. I don't like runny omelets. I'll tell you. Can I tell you my biggest pet peeve of all, maybe in all food, is when someone makes a burrito for you and they don't melt the cheese before handing it to you. Mm. Like Chipotle just throws the cheese on there and wraps it up and hit. No, you have to melt the cheese on the flat top before handing it to me. Mm-hmm. Throwing cold cheese into a warm, wet burrito is disgusting.
I agree. I happen to agree. And it's not like many places will do that.
No,
not
but
many
my place back do home does you. It. All that matters. My place back home, but going to, I was like 15 years old, they wrap it up, put it back on the flat top, and cook it to kind of crispy outside a little bit, but it's melt the cheese.
Yeah, that's what I do. Even when I get... So like there's a place called Dos Toros in New York, or I get a burrito here in the Chicago burbs. I will unwrap it out of the foil and I will put it in a pan myself to crisp it up before I eat it. Because if you're not eating a burrito crispy, you are selling yourself short with the burrito experience. And you're also not getting the cheese as melty as it should be. I agree. I think that's a great take.
That's a pet peeve of mine.
That's our very brief intro into breakfast foods and buffets and as it might relate. But yeah, I haven't been to a giant buffet in a long time. And I don't know that I'm like craving it, but if I find myself there.
I'd rather spend money on like a good bowl of ramen, like a good burrito, some tacos, and go to a buffet.
No, I agree. But sometimes you just find yourself in that situation. If you're like in an all-inclusive resort, that can happen sometimes.
Yeah, of course,
where you're just okay, this is what we're dealing with. And like, I've had great all-inclusive buffets. I had a great one in Mexico. I still remember it. They were doing great things.
We went to Mexico in February. It's fantastic. Yeah.
So, all right, that's buffet talk. That thus concludes buffet strategy. That I'm now actually going. I'm going to forget something that I meant to mention. And it's going to annoy me, and then I'll just bring it up on Big Boy Bets, which I think we're going to do the first episode the 25th. We'll do a national preview on the 25th, which is before week zero. So we'll also talk week zero. And then we will record our following one before week one. So that'll be on it'll come out. They're coming out Thursdays all season long. Big Boy Bets. Just go wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe, follow Big Boy Bets. Get in on it. It's Jeff and I. It's college football. It's large human issues. And I don't know. We're going to have some fun.
I cannot wait for the season and to gamble on it.
Ty, that's all I have.
Bigboybets.show is where you can find
thank you.
A little bit more information or sign up for updates. Big Boy Bets again on our very own Solid Verbal Network. Mr. Schwartz, it is always a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you.
We will have to have you back very soon to maybe suss out some other gambling picks here and get your views. It's always fun.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Dan, that is Jeff Schwartz.
Yeah.
Fox Sports. Jeff Schwartz is smarter than you. SiriusXM. Jeff Schwartz knows what he's doing. He's a funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
I love the buffet strategy. I love the gambling strategy as well.
Yeah.
All sorts of useful intel.
Well, I think his the general strategy of not just looking at where the sharp money is coming into, but also being hyper specific with your expertise. That if you want to pursue college football gambling on even a casual level, whatever, just be like a Mountain West expert. Be a Conference USA. Now, it's harder to gather information sometimes with those smaller conferences that you're really going to have to dig deep for those media sources and practice sessions, whatever. But if you are learning just the general rhythms and tendencies of Conference USA, Sun Belt, MAC, Mountain West, just random teams that, you know, historically, as you look at, or coaches or whatever, if you're looking at trends, that's the move.
Yeah.
That's the strategy. It seems that you're like, it's impossible to learn in great detail the national scope for gambling purposes.
No, but it's true.
If you can be specific, that makes sense.
Very true. And Jeff has a wealth of knowledge for all things out in the Pac-12. He played in the Pac-12. So it makes a lot of sense. But do stay tuned to bigboybets.show. Bigboybets.show is going to get rolling here. We had kind of our pilot season a year ago with you and Jeff. It did well. But now, obviously, there's just a lot more momentum as we head into the 2021 season. And we're excited to get that bad boy fire back up. Again, bigboybets.show, that's where you can sign up for updates. We'll send some stuff out in advance of that podcast actually starting to drop here on Thursdays, as you said. Right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So look, here's the deal, one and all. We have a couple more shows to get through before we get to our week zero preview. Our week zero preview, which is going to drop next week, next Wednesday. That will also feature a Q&A, our last Q&A before we get into the content of this here college football season. Once we get to next Wednesday, then this thing starts up. We start cranking the engine up, Dan. We do previews on Wednesday. We're going to do our fun new news show on Fridays. And then we're going to do our recap on Mondays as well. So the whole thing is just a cycle. It's going to repeat over and over again until we get to the end of the year. Don't forget, if you are a Patreon subscriber at verballers.com, you get early access to all of those shows. So Sunday mornings. You also get access to, Sunday afternoon, excuse me.
Yeah, we'll record Sunday mornings as soon as we humanly possibly can.
Yeah.
Watch everything that we didn't watch and catch up on everything. We're shooting for early afternoon the day before the public gets it. So if you are used to a Sunday afternoon recap show, if you're used to, a Tuesday evening for your commute home or something like that, or you want that Thursday news show for your commute home Thursday or an afternoon listen Thursday at the gym or wherever, we got you. Verballers.com.
Verballers.com. That is all I have, Dan, outside of you going to the concert and not telling me about it. I don't know how this slipped under the radar. This is a very important topic that you and I have done a full podcast on with our friend Bill Barnwell.
That's true.
And you neglected to mention this. I'm over it. It's okay. We're still good. But how was the show?
Great show. So Wrigley Field, Green Day, Fall Out Boy, Weezer, hometown show for Fall Out Boy. Green Day is the headliner on the tour for obvious reason. They're an enormous band. They've been cranking out hits since like 1994. Wrigley Field did a great job in terms of the sound was good. I did bring earplugs because of course you did.
Yeah.
We had decent enough seats, not on the field, but we were midway up. We were not in the upper tier and we were not covered, so we were low enough along the first baseline, had a decent view of the stage. The screen work was great, the video stuff. And we got there right as Weezer began. And Weezer did a set that I would, if I were to predict what they were going to do as a pretty big Weezer fan, I think they hit the highlights. You know, your Hash Pipe, your Island in the Sun, they played.
Yeah.
The only song that I was pleasantly surprised that they played was Surf Wax America from the Blue Album. So they did a good job with that. And yeah, Weezer or Rivers has a giant mullet and mustache now.
Okay.
That's a thing. The only problem is it's a sort of triple headliner, pseudo headliner. So they all play for an hour plus. Green Day is like an hour and a half, closer to 2 hours, depending. And it's just a long show. So Weezer was playing during the daytime, and it's just harder to do something cool during the day because you can't play with lights and pyrotechnics to the same effect without a night sky.
No.
So Weezer was good. Fall Out Boy had more energy, but less stage. Like their way to command Wrigley Field was not that impressive. But their set itself was really fun. And then Green Day, I mean, Billy Joe's been doing it, like I said, for so long that yeah. he has the full Wrigley Field in the palm of his hand. Yeah. He is just a showman. He is at center stage there. And Green Day, you forget how many hits. I forgot how many hits they had and just memorable songs. And they nailed it. They absolutely nailed it. Great, great stage work, video work, everything. And I had a great time. So it was a last minute. I had tickets to go in LA last summer.
I remember that. And they canceled it because of COVID.
Canceled for COVID yeah. at Dodger Stadium. And then I had started looking and it's really pricey. But then Jody with an I was on a random Facebook board in our neighborhood and somebody had two tickets and they said they would eat the fees. And the fees were like $45 or something crazy for this show. So we jumped on those. And so I went with my friend, a Lion Eye fan, Scott,
of course,
who is visiting at the moment, and both wearing earplugs, both yelling out the songs that we nice. Listened to like sophomore year of high school. Right. It's great.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So look, verballers.com is the Patreon. Go and check it out if you're interested.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're just interested in the tease that I did at the top of the show, we have something Definitely. Cool coming. Don't forget to leave a review if you like the show. It does help us now as we get closer to the start of the season. Daniel, I think that is all the content I am good for today.
Same. That's all I have. I'm done.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, we will talk to you all in a few days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.